is Civic Media, bringing you news, talk, and community-minded conversations all across Wisconsin. You can find us at civicmedia.us and download the app for free today. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco, Sports Director for Civic Media. Right now, we're airing a Packers, Badgers, Brewers, or Bucks game over the air, but due to our rights agreements, we're not able to stream those games here. Civic Media might be a newer company, but we are dedicated to providing the best in sports coverage. Our team has decades of experience covering sports right here in Wisconsin. We've got Mike Clemens, who covers our state's biggest teams on location and does daily updates on all of our Civic Media stations statewide. Many of our stations have local reporters dedicated to teams in their area, covering their community dozens or even hundreds of times each year. No matter where you're at in Wisconsin, we are committed to covering sports, especially in the communities that our stations serve. And we put all of our local coverage right here on our stream, so you can go ahead and grab the free Civic Media app so you never miss a game at civicmedia.us/app. You can find the game you're looking for over the air, or you can stay tuned right here on the stream for more news, talk, and conversation. Thank you for listening to Civic Media from all of us here on the sports team.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. The Maggie Dawn Show.
It is absolutely disgusting for conservatives to suggest that because someone is poor or struggling, that they lack judgment. If anybody needs morality policing, it's rich folks, for crying out loud, not people who are struggling to put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
We're airing a game right now, but stay here on the stream for more Civic Media news, talk, and more.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to. Lots to talk about. Heads up, folks. The sun came out. It'll come out again. We will get through the next 4 years just as we'd done the last. There will be battles. There will be fights. There will be opportunities to laugh, to cry, to organize, to fight. And, you know, this is what democracy looks like. Like it or not, people went to the polls on Tuesday. They cast their ballots. Trump got more. And our system, it worked. Like it or not, happy or not, I will be the first to tell you, was wrong on a lot of fronts. Thought Pennsylvania would be closer. Thought that the mail-in ballots would have taken longer to count. A lot of us were wrong, and not because Trump grew any new support, not because Trump grew new voters or pulled more people in, he didn't, but because, well, a lot of people just didn't show up. A lot of people either thought, hey, let somebody else do it. A lot of people thought, hey, I'm not happy with the way things are. I'm dropping out. A lot of people just not there. And it, as we've said all along, whichever candidate's going to get their people out to the polls, casting those ballots, that's going to win. It's that simple. And didn't do it. did not do it. And you got to start asking the questions why. Was it the economy? Was it immigration? You know, was it, you know, jobs? Was it, you know, just we're just that kind of society? That racism, misogyny, all of that. You know, was it, you know, was it the fact that Kamala Harris was a woman? Was it the fact that she was a black Indian woman? Probably all of the above. And the question now is, where do you go? Where do we go from here? I've had a lot of people say, I'm dropping off of social media. I'm leaving the country. Nobody's leaving the country. Nobody's leaving social media. Take a breath. In a democratic system, in a democracy, this is a contact sport. It's participatory. You gotta be involved. And sadly, we're going to have to go through a period where things are going to get ugly. If you look at Project 2025, you look at the Republican playbook, there is going to be pain and suffering. There is going to be chaos. There is going to be a fundamental shift in what America has been. And the question is, are you willing? Are you ready? Are you able to stand up and fight back against that? Ultimately, there's another election in 2 years in the House. You can send a resounding message. There'll be senators up for election. There's the ability to swing that back. But on the short term, in the days and weeks and months from now until that moment, it's about being here for each other. It's about support. It's about organizing. It's about being involved. Now is not the time to bury your head in the sand. You know, this isn't one of those moments where my side doesn't win. I'm going to take my ball and go home. Nope, that's not how this works. That is not how democracy works. And I don't want to have to be the cheerleader in this, but I've gotten way too many emails of people saying, I just can't, I'm in despair, I'm depressed. No, 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 no. Now more than ever, we need to pick yourself up, dust yourself off, examine why. Why did we not get people out to the polls? What is it that did that? Is it the inflation? Is it the fact that people are hurting? And because people are. Look, the economy's doing great. But there are always people who are going to be left behind. There are always people who are going to be struggling. Is that going to get better in the next 4 years? I argue it will not. I argue that will get much worse. Especially when you listen to what Elon Musk and the others have been saying about what the future is. Maybe we do need to go through a bit of pain. Maybe we do need to go through a bit of struggle and sacrifice. Because I don't think we remember what that's like. Now, I was talking with somebody a little bit ago who said, you know, I grew up in the 70s when we had real inflation. I grew up in the 70s when mortgage rates were really high. I grew up in the 70s when things were not great economically. But at least we had stronger labor unions to fight for higher wages to offset some of that pain. At least we had some social programs in place to make sure that people didn't go hungry or go broke. You know, maybe we need to realize once again what conservatism really means. And what, when they say things, they mean everybody, not just the select few. Now, Trump is going to get his inauguration. He's going to, and look, I fully support that. There will be a peaceful transfer of power, absolutely, without question. No, Joe Biden is not going to resign and make Kamala Harris president. No, he's not going to hold a January 6th of his own. No, he's not going to do any of the things that social media is saying he should do right now. He is not, because he respects the rule of law. He respects the transfer of power. And that is going to happen. Be better. What we need to do is organize. We need to be standing shoulder to shoulder when the bad stuff comes. We need to be getting more involved in our communities. If Trump is serious about getting a big bus and deporting people, you need to show up to say no. I had a friend of mine say, you know, if I'm in a restaurant and or if I'm somewhere and I see them them come grab somebody, I'm going to act. And he asked, will you or will anyone else? And that's the question we have to ask each and every one of ourselves and our family. Will you stand up in the face of wrong? I go back to learning about, you know, World War II and the rise of fascism. And it was because good people did nothing. It's because people who weren't next on the list did nothing. It's because good people of conscience did nothing when the immoral, when the illegal, when the wrong do what they're going to do. So it's our job, it's incumbent on us to organize together, to stand together. This is what democracy looks like. And yeah, didn't get the election to go our way. Was never really all that positive it would, given the situation. But we at least know the problem now. And a big part of it is we've stopped talking to each other. So for me, the way forward, the path forward, is to seek out conversations with Red Hats. Let them gloat. Give them their moment. And then, as I've been doing, you know, when's that dollar a gallon gas coming? When's the 99-cent eggs coming back? When are all of these things that you were promised, you were told was going to happen? When are those going to happen? I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, Rick at RickSmithShow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. We'll bunch back after this. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the question, are we going to deserve what we get? I mean, because ultimately, as I said at the beginning, I don't know that Trump grew any new voters. I just think a lot of Democrats didn't bother to show up. And the numbers kind of bear that out. A lot of people stayed home. It's the way it's looking. So the question is this who we are as a country? Did we earn what is coming? And here to share some thoughts on that question, I've asked my good friend Will Bunch to come share some thoughts. Will's a national columnist over at the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's got a new piece out. Be honest, America. This is who we are. A bitter, broken land that wants Trump to lead. Will, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome, Rick. Thanks for having me.
So I guess let's start there. Is this who we are? Bitter, broken, angry, all this? Is it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny when you think back, so many people, and when I say people, I don't mean you, Rick, but you know the people I'm talking about, you know, who were just geared up for, we're not going to know who wins this election for months because it's going to be disputed and we're going to be fighting it out. And this whole thing about, well, you know, Trump's going to be behind, but he's going to go out and claim victory and all that. And then Election Day comes, and a couple things I have to say about Election Day. One is, you know, I mean, I was out and about like most people were, and I was certainly at my local polling place to vote. And, it was a beautiful day. People did wait on lines. We should probably do something about how long people have to wait to vote in this country. But People patiently waited. There was no violence.
Yeah, we're going to, Will. We're just going to stop it.
What? Oh.
No, we're gonna make lines shorter. We're just going to stop voting. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, that's what Trump says, apparently. But sorry, I misunderstood you. But yeah. Well, the lie. But you know. But my point is, it was to use the overused expression. It was a free and fair election. There was no violence. Nobody showed up at the polls with machine guns. I mean, I know there were these Russian bomb threats, but you know, even at those places, it's all right. Well, they closed the polls for an hour and then they kept them open for an hour later. It was not a it was horrible that happened, but it didn't mean it was an unfair election. And they started counting the votes, and you know, not only did Trump win in the Electoral College, but he appears to have won perhaps a majority. I mean, he certainly seems to have won a plurality for the first time, and he may end up, you know, we'll see what happens in California, but he may end up with an over 50% majority of the vote.
Yeah. So this is us.
Yeah. This is he, and I mean, think about this, you know, if you saw the exit polls that came out like at 5 o'clock last night, and the most surprising find after months of the media telling us the number one issue was the economy, which, as you know, was a big issue for a lot of voters. But these exit polls said, no, the number one issue is democracy and you know, the future of democracy. And, you know, democracy kind of worked fine yesterday.
Yeah.
We had a democratic election just like we said we wanted to, and the majority of people chose Donald Trump, you know, and they chose him after the impeachments. They chose him after the 34 felony convictions. They chose him even though he's still under indictment for January 6th. They chose him because they chose him, they chose him knowing about January 6th. They chose him knowing about all of the sexual assault cases.
We
they
walked into him. It eyes open.
Yeah, they chose him after the Madison Square Garden rally, after all the racism, all the remarks about Latinos and about immigrants coming into this country, all the remarks about women, and more than 50% of America voted for him. And you know, like anything, you can't boil down why that happened to one sentence or one half of a sentence, you know.
I think a big part of it, Will, is, and you wrote this in your piece, and I thought it was a very astute observation. You said that the right, you know, they've constructed a giant anti-fact, anti-science bubble of misinformation, and the world's richest people, like ex-owner Elon Musk and our foreign adversaries like Russia, phone bombing threats to U.S. polling place until the last minute possible, have been happy to help them make it even bigger, this kind of misinformation machine that fills people's head with things that aren't true and aren't reality. And I look, virtually every person I've talked to who voted for Trump has regurgitated some misstatement, some misinformation, some just blatant falsehoods.
Yeah. So I mean, you and I are maybe different from some other Harris voters who are out there, because we talk to Trump people, you know, you talk to them
every chance I get.
Yeah, you talk to him a lot in different settings. You know, I, as a journalist, I've been to a couple Trump rallies this year, and I go to the Trump rallies mainly to talk to the regular voters who are there. And it's funny because like you and I both do the same thing, which we both always ask them, well, where are you getting your, well, first of all, we hear this disinformation and this like gobbledygook, right? And so the obvious next question is, well, where are you getting this information from? And, you know, it's Newsmax or OAN or it's YouTube or I'll tell you what I found kind of alarming was, you know, when I went to Trump's now infamous rally out in Latrobe a couple of weeks ago, Latrobe, Pennsylvania, you know, I asked a half a dozen people where they were getting their information from, and they all quickly answered the same thing, which was X, Elon Musk's X, formerly known as Twitter. And it was kind of fascinating to me because all my friends who are liberals call it Twitter. Like, nobody calls it X.
Right.
But conservatives only call it X. So that tells you something actually right there. But
and it makes you wonder why Elon Musk bought it. I guess it confirms. Yeah,
no, it does. Why, it doesn't make you wonder.
It confirms. It shows you why
Elon Musk bought it.
Right.
Because it's doing, you know, in fact, it's funny you say that, because I think I wrote this in a column recently that by one measure, it was the worst investment in history, right? Because he paid $44 billion and now Wall Street values it at like $10 billion. So he lost all this money. But on the other hand, maybe it was the best investment ever because he wanted to be in control of the conversation. You know, that kind of control is just power that you can't buy, right? Yeah. But he did buy it for $44 billion. And now he has this amazing control over the national conversation.
So
because even though you say, oh, well, really, you look at the numbers, not that many people are on X. But these people go on X and they tell their friends and they tell their family members, you know, and they send them emails. Another thing you hear from people, where did you get information? It's like, oh, I hear people tell me things, or it's out there. People, you know,
and many people like, say,
yeah, and it, you know, it's their uncle's, you know, group email or whatever. But a lot of that misinformation or actually disinformation, which is, you know, deliberate misinformation, starts on Elon Musk's X.
Yeah, so the question then becomes, well, you know, if this is who we are, is there any help for us? I mean, ultimately, you know. When you talk to somebody face to face, they don't believe this is who we are. But as a collective, if this is what we're electing, you know, look in the mirror. And is there any hope?
Well, I mean, my initial thought is a couple things. One is, you know, I mean, as demoralized as everybody is today, and you know, we've all lived through 2016, so we know that. Today is the worst day, and it's gonna, you know, slowly we're gonna come back to life after this, right? And I made the point. I mean, if you remember in 2016, you know, there were some people on the far left protested Trump's inauguration. You know, you had the Women's March the next day after Trump's inauguration. I would say, and this goes against my normal instincts. I wrote. Do not protest Trump's inauguration because we wanted a Democratic election and we had one and he won. So there's nothing to protest in the fact that Trump is being inaugurated. That was the result of the election that we wanted. But we all know from what he said on the campaign trail, from, you know, his many pronouncements, we know from Project 2025 and everything else that he's planning to do things that are going to be outside the Constitution.
Right.
He's planning to do things that are illegal, I believe, most likely. And he's undoubtedly planning to do things that are immoral, like, for example, pardoning the January 6th insurrectionists, which he can do, which is legal, but it's not moral, right?
Right. But just so we're clear, because I want to make sure that this is a crystal clear point. What you're saying is, you know, on January 20th, they're going to have the inauguration, which, you know, we do in this country. We do it peacefully. It's that peaceful transfer of power that is going to happen. There's no question that Joe Biden is going to do anything like Donald Trump would have done. That's not going to happen. There's not going to be any Hold on. I got to get to this. The point is, you know, let them have this, but don't not organize. The organizing is down the road when the bad policies start coming out.
Yeah.
That's what I'm getting.
They'll protest January 20th, but on January 22nd, when he pardons, you know, when he lets 1,000 insurrectionists out of jail, be there to protest, you know, be ready, you know, to resist these acts, because that will help you get you organized for what comes. And out of this organization, hopefully, will become the roots of a new political movement, because the one we have now isn't working. You know, the one that gave us Hillary Clinton and the one that gave us Kamala Harris. And I'm not saying this is knocks on them. I think they're both very fine human beings. I think they would have been very good presidents. But that structure isn't working for us. So we have to figure out, whether it's within the Democratic Party, which I guess is easier, or whether it's happened in this country before in the 1850s, whether a new party somehow needs to be forged out of this wreckage because it's going to be bad. We need to start a political movement that figures out how to do some of these things that you're talking about, Rick, about how to reach people where they are, and because we're not reaching them now, and how to talk about the things that they care about that we care about too, things that they want about improving their life economically. We want those, liberals, even liberals who are not in organized labor, they're not working class, they're maybe upper class liberals, but they say they support a higher minimum wage, they support the ability to organize unions more easily. All right, well, put your money where your mouth is, and let's work for those things and show some.
But none of those people are on the right.
Solidarity. Yeah.
But none of those people are going to be in power. I mean, this is my problem.
Well, yeah.
The argument that the left is dead, because I've been being inundated with, can we now put the leftism inside it? It's dead. We need a labor party. We need another party. The Democrats are dead. This is the message right now that I'm getting, and I don't necessarily agree.
One thing that people talked about a lot in 2016, and you did actually see some of this, I have to say, and it's what you can do is, liberals, the left, whatever, does have power in cities, in some states, California and New York, two of our biggest states, are led by Democrats, and the Democrats who lead them right now are not good, especially in New York. But I'm not a big fan of Gavin Newsom either, so the leadership is terrible. But we have the power to elect leaders in those places, like next year, starting next year in New York.
So I want to get back to Tuesday
in New York City,
right?
Who can demonstrate. What actual successful policies for working middle class people can do?
Well, I would argue we saw that in Michigan, and Michigan still went for Trump. I mean, this is the weird part in all this. I thought Gretchen Whitmer and the Democratic House and Senate there did a phenomenal job, only to not see Michigan go for Harris.
And it gets back to the start of this. It's a media communication thing where people see things in a national lens, and I think more importantly, people see things in a cultural lens, which is tribal in nature, right? Yeah. It's like, okay, it's great that you passed the minimum wage or you did some of these other things, but I got to stick with my tribe,
No, it's a good point. So let me ask you a last line of questioning, because, ultimately, the polling was really bad. Because look,
unbelievably so, I mean, this whole Ann Selzer thing in Iowa is one of the most shocking things I've ever seen. I don't understand it. I mean, there needs to be, clearly this election, it showed that, both the polling industry, but also the obsession with polls and the media and whoever else is obsessed with polls, the whole thing is broken. It's got to disappear. It's got to go away.
Yeah.
It's just terrible. And the other thing is, near and dear to my heart is, we learned so much about the mainstream media in this cycle, not doing a good job. And the thing is, I mean, the mainstream media has kind of worked itself into a position of irrelevancy, And I think I mean, the Harris campaign pretty much bypassed the mainstream media because it said, well, who really needs them? Who really needs the aggravation at this point of dealing with these people?
There you go. And so,
you know, and every crisis is an opportunity. I mean, you know, there's an opportunity if a new media world is being created as we speak, that there's an opportunity to put, you know, a pro working people, pro middle class, more progressive stamp on that new media. So let's get to work on that.
There you go. You know? Will, I appreciate the time, man. As always, great stuff. Hope people will check out your latest piece. Be honest, America. This is who we are. A bitter, broken land that wants Trump to lead us, over at the Philly Inquirer. Will, thanks so much.
Thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I want to hear your thoughts. You agree with Will? I mean, are we bitter and broken? I don't know. You look at the results on Tuesday. I want to hear your thoughts. Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
Download the free Civic Media app today at civicmedia.us.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
This Civic Media station is currently broadcasting the Packers, Badgers, Brewers, or Bucks over the air. Due to streaming restrictions, we can't provide you the broadcast here. You can find an affiliated station at civicmedia.us to find the game over the air. We'll also have updates on the game and the biggest sports news from Mike Clemens daily on Civic Media stations all across Wisconsin.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
One of the areas I think we are most certainly going to need to organize around is protecting Social Security and Medicare. Because look, the right has had a wet dream for decades on destroying Social Security and Medicare. They were against it from the beginning. They've been against it all along. But oddly enough, come election time, they seem to find their way, you know, to saying, oh, we're the party of Social Security and Medicare. And, well, maybe the party that wants to destroy it. And here to share some thoughts on what he thinks the coming months and, well, 4 years are going to bring to us, I've asked my good friend Alex Lawson to come share some thoughts. Alex is the executive director of Social Security Works. You can check out their website, socialsecurityworks.org. Alex, thanks for taking time for us.
Glad to be here. It's a pretty brutal day, but happy to speak with you, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, look, the aftermath of Tuesday's election, it's going to have some consequences. And one of those consequences could be more privatization of Medicare, could be, you know, some type of privatization of Social Security. There's a lot on the table now that, well, we are where we are.
Yeah, I think privatization of Medicare is it's going to be full steam ahead from, you know, the word go. It's really clearly laid out in Project 2025. It's what President Trump did when he was last in the Oval Office. They basically just put their thumb on the scale for corporate insurers to just gobble up more and more of traditional Medicare. And Medicare is already about 54% privatized. So they're not going to need to do too much more until it is in a full death spiral where you have, you know, if you only have 20% of people in traditional Medicare, that's going to generally be the sickest, the oldest, those who need the most care. It's not a large enough risk pool to really work, and it begins a death spiral in health policy terms. So that is, I mean, that's right away, and that's separate from also, you know, his concepts of a plan is just to destroy anything that puts brakes or checks on the corporate insurers from controlling every aspect of our healthcare. So getting rid of traditional Medicare, that's, you know, a huge part of it, but also going back to when there were no checks on corporate insurers for denying people for pre-existing conditions and all the other things that they got away with. And, you know, right now we don't have good healthcare in this country. We pay the most in the world and we have the worst outcomes in our peer nations. And it's just going to get worse. So that's a very bleak road. We will be doing everything we can to fight against that as we did last time. I think they will probably just try to repeal the ACA. They're definitely going to try to repeal the Inflation Reduction Act, get rid of Medicare's ability to negotiate drug prices. You know, their DOJ is going to be in charge of defending against the lawsuits from the pharmaceutical corporations against Medicare drug price negotiation, which I'm sure they're going to sit on their hands. And so, you know, what we're going to see is privatized Medicare, drug prices going up, corporate insurers feeling like they can do whatever they want. And let me be clear, what they want to do is to deny healthcare to those who need it most. That's how they make money.
Yeah.
On Social Security, it's a similarly bleak picture. It is a little bit more protected because even under the worst scenario, there is not 60 votes in the Senate for the Republicans. We don't really know what's happened in the House yet. We might not know for a bit because of California. If they have a trifecta, I don't think they come for Social Security through the front door immediately. I think healthcare and tax cuts are the big thing. So they'll let the ACA subsidies expire and they'll re-up the tax giveaway to billionaires, maybe add on some more to that. They'll attack Social Security through the side door, as they always do, death by a thousand cuts. You know, they'll go after the commissioner, Martin O'Malley, probably fire him and replace him, maybe put their old guy, Andrew Saul, back in, demoralize the workforce, bust the union. They have the lowest staffing rate in decades, even as 10,000 baby boomers retire every day. And so it's a real crisis at Social Security, and they'll just sort of keep ramping that crisis up and then try to get to a place where they can, you know, demand the crisis that they created. Right. To push through changes. The old kneecap the mailman and then complain that the mail is late.
No, I mean, we've broken it. It doesn't work, so we need to privatize it so we can profitize it. And look, I mean, it's glaring. It's right in front of us. We know this, and yet still, somehow, here we are. But again, I go through this campaign. You saw Republicans actually running on, they're the party of Social Security, which is really kind of freaky.
I was there, Rick. I spent, you know, I did a 1,900-mile tour through Montana 7 days. Seven events in 5 days all across that state. And what I found everywhere, first of all, Sheehy, who is going to be the next senator in Montana, ran his TV ads, his first tier one TV ads, the main buys, were on Social Security. They were saying he's the guy who's going to protect it. And Senator Tester was going to give it away to the illegals. That was their big line this whole time. And Trump was sending mailers on that in Pennsylvania, in Milwaukee, in Michigan, in Wisconsin. You know, people were sending us the mailers and they're like, we just got this in the mail. So it said, you know, Trump's going to protect Social Security and Kamala's going to destroy it by giving it away to so-called illegals. And I heard that every time I went out. And I worked rooms with retirees in Ohio, in Michigan, in Montana. And that was the question. You know, that's what people would say. They're like, I'd say, look, the issue is people only pay in on the first $168,800 of income. after that, they don't pay in a nickel. So the billionaires, they finish paying in on like the first day of the year.
By lunch.
All we got to do is get them to pay the same rate as the rest of us. And there it is. We're the problem solved. And people would, you know, like some sizable percentage of them would shake their head. And the questions I would always get were, you know, well, what about all of these illegals who are taking our benefits? And it was just, it really got into people's brains and it was not effectively challenged. And, you know how this works when you have huge media platforms to just blast that into people's brains. And the response is actually somewhat more complicated. So it's like that intuitive lie beats the non-intuitive truth every time.
Yep.
Right. So like by law, undocumented or unauthorized immigrants, as they're called officially, cannot get benefits. But they pay in to the tune of tens of billions of dollars a year.
Yeah, now you're just making sense.
I know.
But because that doesn't fit the narrative. The narrative is, we're giving every person thousands of dollars the second they walk across the border. We're taking care of them from cradle to grave. We're doing all the things for them that they think our government should be doing for them, but we're not doing it for them. Or the other ones, but the jealousy angle is just, well, palpable.
It is, and it worked. I mean, I saw that all of my work did not come to that much, but I told people, my line, you don't have to be worried about an immigrant coming to this country and taking your Social Security. You gotta be worried about a billionaire taking your Social Security, because they're working day and night.
Yep.
to do just that. I would get some nodding heads, but it just wasn't when you don't have, I mean, think about this. And I know you know this, Rick, the billionaire who's going to be put in charge of the commission to find $3 trillion of quote unquote savings. That means our money. That's what they're going to find in the couch cushion is Elon Musk. Elon Musk spent $44 billion of basically fake money based on Tesla's valuation to buy Twitter to win Donald Trump the election. And he did. That's what they understand. The billionaires understand that in order to win, you need to talk to people. And that asymmetry that we continue to face is devastating. So even if the Democrats were totally on the right message all the time, which we can debate whether they were. I wish they had more mail on Social Security, for example. I wish they ran harder on healthcare, for example. Those are winners. But even if they were perfectly on message with the platform asymmetry, it's unclear that anyone would have heard the right message.
No, and this is where I come back to what happened to our healthy skepticism. What happened to when I say this all the time. I've been saying it a lot more the last couple of days. One of my grandfather's favorite quotes was, if a rich guy's going to take a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you better spend two to get it, because they understand return on investment. His generation knew if the boss was telling you something that was in his best interest, it was not in yours. And yeah, this is that kind of scenario. When did we lose that skepticism of extreme wealth and what their vision for the country is?
Yeah, I wrestle with that often, Rick. And I'm like, I should ask you. You seem like you have a better handle on it. You might be able to tell me. But I've wondered this forever. I was over in Glasgow, Scotland, a while ago. But just the general vibes there, if you're just talking to like a random person in a restaurant or a bar, it's just like written in their bones. Like, oh yeah, if the boss says that, then the boss, don't believe it. They're the boss. Why would you believe the boss? They're not on your side. Are you the boss? Are you the billionaire? But in America, there's this bootlicker mentality that is just like the billionaires say things and these stridently not billionaires, right? The furthest thing from a billionaire who are just willing to take a bullet for these guys. And you're like, they don't care about you at all, at all. And still it's like, oh yeah, I think it's probably the immigrants who took my job and sent it overseas. You're like, how'd they do that? I'm pretty sure it was the bosses who did that. They're the ones with the power and the money that make those decisions. Yeah. But that class understanding and solidarity has eroded to an enormous point here in the U.S. And I think you saw that yesterday.
Yeah. Well, whose fault is that then? Is it the Democratic Party's fault because they used to be a much more strong party for working class values? Is it the fact that labor unions have shrunk down to what, 6.5% in the private sector? Is it, the fact that we've been told for 40, 50 odd years that we're all going to be rich? That our religion is preaching prosperity gospel, that everything is the worship of wealth?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is, I think it's probably a little bit of all of those. You know, I am a firm, staunch supporter of Bernie Sanders' point that until the Democratic Party fully embraces and pushes every day as the party of the working class, then the Democratic Party is going to lose. And there has been a realignment. You can see it. The Democrats are now winning college-educated folks at huge margins and losing people without college education, working class people. And, the policies, I know you know this, but the policies could not be more stark. The Democrats are absolutely, even with all of the corporate Dems in there, between the two parties, there's only one of them that pushes the PRO Act, right? There's only one of them that actually tries to do stuff for organized labor. There's only one of them who, bailed out the Teamsters pensions, I say bail out on purpose because I want people to think of it as usually only the banks get bailed out. But in this case, the pensions did, which is exactly what should happen. The Republicans are absolutely, by policy and agenda, anti-working class, but they've, it's like a bunch of the elitist of the elites. These are Yaleys, Harvard, skull and bones types who play dummies on TV, and they're good at it. They're good at, they eat their crumpets in their private clubs in Washington, D.C., and then they go on television and they talk like dummies. To try to connect with people, and it works. But I also there's a erosion of identity in this country, and I think that is through a variety of reasons, but primarily it's actually to sell us stuff. It's again with the financialization of every aspect of our lives. We're just hit with just an unending amount of propaganda advertising that defines us only as consumers, right? Our job is to go to work, to make money, to buy things that we generally don't need. And when you don't have an identity, a purpose, something larger than yourself, being part of something, then it is very easy for a con man, for a con man, an autocrat, somebody to give you the identity. Follow me. I'll be your identity. You don't need to worry about being adrift and what is your purpose because I'll be your purpose. And until we really have a deeper conversation about how we can instill the purpose of solidarity amongst the people, I do think we will be in a series of losses for a while.
Yeah, I mean, the commodification of just about everything, education, healthcare, all of it, instead of, things being about the commons and how we have a functional society, it's about who's going to get rich off of it. So leave me with some hope here, Alex, because I know
tough.
A lot of people are struggling. We've been in this moment somewhat before. The assaults on Social Security and Medicare have been ongoing. Give me some hope here.
Yeah, I mean, the hope is the sort of something that you said before. I mean, the Republicans know they can't come at the things that are deeply loved by the American people straight on. So we have to be sophisticated in fighting back. But we know that Social Security is massively popular. You can see it annoyingly again in the results last night. You have ballot measures of things that are really progressive, right? Like the values under these ballot measures that which passed enormously. And at the same time, people voted for Donald Trump. So people are thinking that Donald Trump is somehow the person who's associated with things like raising the minimum wage,
yep,
protecting Social Security, protecting Medicare. When their agenda is opened to the people, then the people do rally to fight back against that. So the hope is solidarity. And in that solidarity, we will win. But it will be bleak, Rick, and we will have to brace ourselves for incredibly tough times. And we'll have to find our community and stand with our community. But in that solidarity, that's where the hope
lies. Yeah, now is not the time to bury your head. Now is not the time to leave social media or flee the country or any of the other nonsense that I've been seeing. Now's the time to get up, dust yourself off, take a deep breath, and keep moving forward.
I couldn't agree more, Rick.
There you go. Alex, I appreciate the time. As always, great seeing you. Hope you'll come back again real soon.
Thanks a lot.
Our good friend Alex Lawson. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Do you think, really, honestly, is there anybody who believes that the Republicans are going to be the party to save Social Security and Medicare? Or is Alex right? It's all on the block. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1990. That was the day that Lemuel Ricket Boulwer died. Boulwer had a notorious reputation with labor leaders. He was the vice president for employee relations for General Electric during the 1950s. He took the lead on labor for the company in 1947, a year after a 17-week bitter strike at General Electric. Determined not to have another such strike, Boulwer cultivated his own brand of labor relations. He advocated doing extensive research and offering what he called a fair, firm offer at the bargaining table. This meant the company would essentially give their final offer on the first day of bargaining and hold nothing back for future negotiations. This take-it-or-leave-it approach came to be known as Boulwerism. Other companies copied his tactic. Boulwer came to be regarded as a master negotiator by corporate leaders. He was known for writing internal communications to GE employees with catchphrases advocating management's position on labor issues. In 1969, at the AFL-CIO convention in Atlantic City, Paul Jennings, the president of the Industrial Union of Electrical Workers, derided Boulwer's tactics. Jennings described it as telling the workers what they're entitled to and trying to shove it down their throats. Boulwer once described fair share unionism as wrong in principle and bad in practice. He is credited with helping to move Ronald Reagan to a more conservative approach to labor. Reagan went to work as a spokesperson for General Electric in 1954. At the time, Reagan had been a Democrat and also president of his union, the Screen Actors Guild. During his time at GE, he moved increasingly to the radical right, especially on labor issues. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the commodification of everything that we take for granted today, I mean, understand, when Republicans are running on Social Security, that they're going to be the saviors? Man, we've lost the message. And I come back to what we've been talking about today. The reality is, and you have to give them credit, the very wealthy in this country have invested their money in a very smart way. They have purchased our media and then told us it's all bad. They have controlled what we see, hear and read, and then have told us it's all bad, so that there's no fact, there's no check on anything anymore. there's just blind faith belief. And then they feed this void with misinformation and alternative reality. And they've been doing this for years. It's not new. It's just amazing how well it's worked. And understand, you know, when I started this program, you know, nearly 20 years ago, we're coming up on, you know, about in March of 05 is when, you know, the brainstorm, you know, came to me and we began moving in the direction for a Labor Day of 05 launch. It was because all of my truck driver buddies were telling me things that you could not verify anywhere but right-wing talk radio. There were no experts who were going to write a paper that the periodical was going to review and publish. There were no broad-based consensus on what they were being sold. They were being sold grievance. They were being puffed up with hyper-individualism. And it's where we are. Look, it worked masterfully. They did an amazing job. And so much so that we, as a society, we have allowed this kind of misinformation to permeate everything we do, even our politics. The fact that Fox News has on a good night, 3 million viewers, and they set the political discourse for 300 million plus of us, pretty impressive and extremely powerful. The fact that we don't talk to each other anymore, we're all on our devices. And what should help us communicate better doesn't seem to do that. Now, when you talk to people face to face about issues, and I do this every chance I get, when you talk about the issues that are important, healthcare, education, public safety, jobs, the future of the country and manufacturing, you know, all of these things that are important to people, the economy, what kind of an economy do we want? Universally, they come back to what are very democratic, very liberal kind of ideologies. But when they vote and they tell you, in that first inch of water, what they believe, it's all this misinformation. All of this stuff that comes from these other quote-unquote news sources. And I've always believed, as someone who's fairly liberal, that more speech is better than less. I'm not someone who believes we censor. Not somebody who believes we shut things down. I'm somebody who says you got to get in there and you got to argue more. You got to make your case better. And this, I guess, is the wake-up call for Democrats, isn't it? This is the wake-up call for the left, for progressives, for the labor community. This is very much the moment where talking to people, finding that common ground, where it's going to be so important. Or we're going to end up looking backwards going, how did all of this happen? Because it never fails. I'll go into a major city and we'll talk about parking and everybody's against privatizing the parking authority. Everybody. How did it happen? Well, it happened because Republicans were able to starve city government of resources. They were able to continue to, squeeze the beast, to where eventually you had to start selling things off. We were all about tax cuts for the very wealthy, all about giveaways for corporate America, all about pushing the can down the road. And then, well, what do you do when you get into trouble? You got to sell off your assets. It's the one thing that Dennis Kucinich, as mayor of Cleveland, wouldn't allow, and it's the reason he got thrown out as mayor. And then it was the reason that the city loved him afterwards. When he wouldn't sell off Muni Light to pay off the city's minor debt, they put the city into bankruptcy because they wanted it. The rich, the powerful, the corporate interests want the commons. They want what's ours. And I'm hoping at some point we come back to each other and understand it's not right, left. It's not Democrat, Republican. It's always been up, down. It's always been the wealthy against the rest of us. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick at rick@therickSmithShow.com.
This is Civic Media, bringing you news, talk, and community-minded conversations all across Wisconsin. You can find us at civicmedia.us and download the app for free today.